welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. I'm your host, Mike Allen. You may have seen the Amazon Prime movie On a Wing and a Prayer. It's about a father and a husband who was flying home with his family from Florida to Louisiana in a small plane when the pilot died, and that father was left having to land the plane by himself. Well, an alert air traffic controller in Florida contacted a pilot in Connecticut who knew the plane, so they'd at least have a chance of talking the father down safely. It's a story that's just going to leave you in awe. And oh yes, it happened on Easter Sunday, 2009. Our guest today, the pilot who talked him down and the girlfriend who assisted him during the ordeal. Carrie Sorensen is the owner of Tally Ho Aviation at Danbury Airport. Ashley Harrison works with Carrie, and the two are a couple. They're going to be along in a moment to share their incredible memories of that day 15 years ago. This week's trivia question: this Connecticut resident survived the sinking of the Titanic, but there was a lot of controversy at the time surrounding his survival. Why? We'll stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. When people need the best quality health care, there's a reason they turn to Yale New Haven Health. In 1826, Yale New Haven Hospital became Connecticut's very first hospital. They were the first hospital in the U.S. to use chemotherapy. Yale New Haven was the first to introduce insulin pumps for diabetic patients. And they introduced the world's first intensive care unit for newborns. For more information about Yale New Haven Health, visit YNHHS.org. That's YNHHS.org. Our story today looks at the very real-life drama that occurred almost 15 years ago in Florida with an important link to Connecticut. It was Easter Sunday, 2009, and a family of four was being flown home from Florida to Louisiana by an acquaintance. Well, suddenly that acquaintance had a fatal heart attack in the cockpit, and there was no co-pilot. That left the father, his wife, and two daughters alone in the plane. Well, there's an Amazon Prime movie on this story called On a Wing and a Prayer, and today we're going to speak to a couple of people who played an outsized role in this tale. Well, on that Easter Sunday, Doug White was returning home from the funeral of his brother. His brother had suffered a heart attack a few days earlier, very similar to what happened to the pilot in the cockpit. Well, now it was time for Doug, his wife, and his two daughters to fly back to Louisiana from Fort Myers, Florida. An acquaintance offered to fly them home as a friendly gesture, and so the four family members and the pilot got on board a King Air 200 airplane and took off. Well, not long into the flight, that pilot did suffer a heart attack at the controls, leaving Doug White alone in the cockpit. His wife and daughters were able to remove the pilot's body to the back of the plane, and then his wife joined him in the cockpit to be of whatever help she could be. Well, miraculously, Doug had taken a couple of flying lessons, so the whole concept of piloting a plane wasn't completely foreign to him, but he had learned on a much simpler plane than the King Air 200 that he was sitting in at that time. For starters, Doug had learned on a single-engine plane with just one propeller and a fixed landing gear that didn't have to be retracted and lowered. Well, the King Air was a twin-engine, two-propeller plane with more sophisticated instrumentation and, yes, retractable landing gear. In short, a completely different type of flying, one that was beyond Doug's training and knowledge, and he knew it. One of the truly basic concepts that Doug understood, though, and it would prove critical, was, sounds simple, but how to use the onboard radio and converse with air traffic controllers. Well, Doug made contact with the control tower in Miami, and in this first dramatic transmission, you can hear the chilling words when he declared an in-flight emergency. He had to inform them the pilot was dead, and then asked for help from somebody who knew the King Air 200.
Miami, King Air 559 or Delta Whiskey.
Air 559 or Delta Whiskey, Miami Center. Here's your loud and clear. How may
I got declared an emergency. My pilot's unconscious. I need help up here.
559 or Delta Whiskey has an unconscious pilot. He needs help.
I need to get this thing on the ground. I'm flying a King Air. My pilot's deceased. I need a King Air pilot to talk to.
Well, that King Air pilot, it turns out, would be a flight instructor based in Danbury, Connecticut, at Danbury Airport, Kerry Sorensen. That day, on Easter Sunday, he was more than 1,000 miles away, as the plane flies, at his home in Danbury. Now, as his story transpires, which is simply incredible, Doug at first is communicating with air traffic controllers in Miami. Then they make the decision to have him land in Fort Myers, so they have to switch him over to the air traffic controllers there. And it was a Fort Myers air traffic controller, Dan Favio, who didn't panic and remembered his good friend Kerry Sorensen, who was a flight instructor with experience flying King Airs. So Dan would call Kerry, and they would use Dan's cell phone to convey information back and forth that pilot Doug White so desperately needed. Well, that day, Kerry Sorensen had some help from his then-girlfriend Ashley Harrison. Well, Kerry and Ashley were gracious enough to sit with me in their office at Danbury Airport and talk through their end of the experience. Kerry, let's start off getting some background on you. So you were, as you say, born in Utah, grew up in Colorado. Tell me about your childhood, because I guess your dad was a pilot.
He was. He flew out of Stapleton Airport for a company called Texas Gulf Aviation. They were a sulfur mining company out of, I think, Texas.
And you were a teenager when he went down, right?
Yep. 14 years old.
And you still decided to become a pilot? Because of that or in spite of that?
No, because I wanted to see what he loved about it so much. Showed up here at Danbury when I was about 17, 18 years old. Said I want to learn how to fly. Flip Turner at the time, my flight instructor, said, well, you know, let's do a discovery flight. You know, make sure you want to, you know, learn how to fly. And I said, no, you don't understand me. So I'll learn how to fly, and then I'll decide at the end whether I like it or not. And I did, you know, it got right into it, dug in both heels, and discovered what he loved about it. It's awesome.
And what is it that you would say that you love the most about it?
It encompasses everything. Geography, you know, navigation, mathematics, physics. It encompasses everything.
You were obviously in this situation part of, as you said on the phone to me before we met, that you were part of a team, that this wasn't just Kerry Sorensen talking this guy down. There were a number of people involved with this. One of them that was key was the guy at the tower in Fort Myers who knew you. Tell us the story. How did he know you? How did you know him? Where does that association begin?
Well, every one of us was key, right down to Doug White, the pilot. But Dan Favio used to work right here at Danbury Airport as an air traffic controller. Danbury's kind of like Mayberry. We all know everybody. It is a truly fun hometown airport. And I kind of make it a business to make sure that most of the pilots around here know the air traffic controllers. As a flight instructor, it makes it easier on the students because they can put a name to a face and it's just not, you know, somebody mean over the radio. We'd commonly bring him into ground schools and, you know, it's like, hey, Dan, what's up, you know? So you know that from your podcast.
Well, sure. And I think the thing maybe most people don't know, and I was actually surprised to learn that when I did the Tower podcast, was that not every air traffic controller is a pilot.
Most aren't.
Why is that?
It takes a tremendous amount of learning and expense to become a pilot. You know, most automobile racers aren't mechanics.
So now, this is why this whole thing happened, because the air traffic controllers needed a pilot who knew the King Air. So now, you're home, or just getting home, and your phone rings, and it's Dan Favio calling to solicit your help to get this guy down out of the sky.
I answer the phone as I do with most of my friends. You know, hey, bud, what's up? And he goes, I don't have time for that now. I got a problem. And those were exactly the words. So he starts off with, well, you know, we got a pilot that died in a King Air and a passenger's taking over the controls and we got to land it.
When Kerry first got the phone call from Dan, I saw his face change. I heard the tone of his voice change, and it went from, hey, buddy, to, all right, let's see what we can do. What do you need? He looked at me, I looked at him, he pointed at the computer, and I started typing, because pretty much what Kerry was looking for was the serial number to the aircraft. So once we got the tail number or the registration number of the aircraft, I was able to look that up, and not knowing what it was that he was necessarily looking for, but based on his expertise and his professional experience with the aircraft, he was able to determine what year or what serial number change it went from a certain avionics platform to another one.
Now, it was a 200 that wasn't that the guy was flying in Florida, and you had a manual somehow in your house for a 500. Was that correct?
Nope, that's incorrect. Through the years, we go through various training courses, and as we go through them, I'll just take the manuals and set them on the bookshelf, or as the ages go on, they go into a box downstairs. And it's just, you know, occasionally you might want to refer to them for something. So I had the manual for a 200, but where it was in that box that's about 4 feet high, I don't know.
So at that point, he had asked me to go into the big box of flight safety manuals. And through the years, because it's been a while since he's flown a King Air, those books were way at the bottom, way at the bottom. So it was a big wardrobe box that I remember digging through and, you know, Gulfstream. But what, King Air? So I just grabbed anything that said King Air and brought it back to him. And that way he was able to get the cockpit poster as well as the checklist for the airplane. So as he's chair flying, armchair flying from our living room to configure the airplane during this whole ordeal, he was able to actually use the checklist.
Well, back up in the air, Doug White was still in touch with the air traffic controllers in Miami, and he had a problem. His plane was continuing to go higher and higher in elevation despite autopilot being on, and at least the way he was looking at the instruments and reading them, the plane should not have been going higher and higher. It should have stopped at a certain elevation. Well, making matters worse, the air traffic controller was having some difficulty comprehending what Doug was telling him, and Doug got a little more frustrated as it went on, at one point having to tell Miami to stay with him.
Air 9 Delta Whiskey, understand you are able to fly an aircraft?
Okay. Single engine, I need to get off this. I'm going through 11,000. I need to get level. Do I turn off the altimeter or not? It's steady climbing, and my, but it looks to me like my altitude descent is on 10,000. I don't know why I keep going climbing.
You think the autopilot is on?
I know it's on.
And we're not at the whiskey yet, right there. Can you tell what altitude it says it's going to climb to?
The altitude set is 10,000, but I'm going through 13 now. It should have leveled off at 10, so how do I stop that is what I want to know.
559 at the whiskey only, and understand. So we're trying to find some help out here, and you're still on a climb.
Still climbing through 14,000. I can turn my altitude set to 15. Maybe that'll stop it.
You said it's set at 15,000.
It said at 10,000, 10,000, but it went through that. So I need to. If I set it to 16,000, will it level off or not under altitude set? 9 Delta whiskey.
Alright, November 9 Delta Whiskey. Okay, I understand that you're going to be leveling off at 15,000. Is that what you're showing on the autopilot?
No, autopilot, so once again, says 10,000. I've already busted 10,000. I'm steady climbing. I need to stop the climb. But stay with me, Miami. Let's go.
559 Delta Whiskey. I'm here. Don't worry. We're trying to find a solution to that.
Well, finally, a different air traffic controller got involved, and she came on board with a new solution. Instead of autopilot controlling the plane, she wanted Doug to take control.
I don't know. I know where the autopilot switch is down there. It's on engage right now. I can engage it if you disengage it.
We're going to have you hand fly the plane.
All right. Do you want me to disengage the autopilot?
Demo 5 Delta Whiskey, affirmative. Disengage the autopilot.
Yeah, I can disengage the autopilot right now.
The yoke level and disengage the autopilot, number 5 Delta Whiskey.
I disengage it. I'm flying the airplane by hand.
All right, number 5 Delta Whiskey. We're going to start a slow, shallow descent. Just easy down on the yoke. A slight descent. We're going to get you down to 11,000. We'll just try to make a nice, shallow 500 feet per minute descent.
You got me heading almost due north.
Number 5 Delta Whiskey, affirmative. I just didn't want to turn you while you're descending. If you're comfortable with that, I'll give you a turn out to the west while you're descending. That's up to you. Would you like to continue straight during the descent or make a turn with the descent?
I can make a turn with the descent. I don't need any weather up here right now either, ma'am.
Okay, I'm not showing any weather on my radar here, but I only show precipitation.
Now, in the Amazon Prime movie, you'll see Doug encountering a storm off the Florida coast. But as you're going to hear soon enough, that was more to make a dramatic point. There was no real storm. But it was at this point that Miami's airport tower switches off to the Fort Myers tower. See, Fort Myers had made contact with Kerry and Danbury, and clearly this would be the best way for everybody to go forward.
Okay, number 5 Delta Whiskey. Just so you know the plan, we're going to bring you around to Fort Myers. They've got the longer runway, and we're going to get you the most available runway for your landing. You're going to do fine.
Connor Delta Whiskey.
Do you have it set up in the second radio, sir?
I do.
Yep, you would switch to. So what I'm going to do, number 5 Delta Whiskey, is contact Fort Myers Approach 132.07 by pushing 2. If you do not get them, just switch it again, and you'll be talking to me. Number 9 or Delta Whiskey, just so you know what we're doing here, we're going to get you down to 1-1000. We're going to make you give you a turn to the west. We're going to hand you off to Fort Myers Approach, and they've got some controllers there that also have pilot experience, and they're going to talk you all the way in down to the landing there. Do you have any experience in a King Air?
Negative.
All right, number 5 Delta Whiskey, you're doing a real good job. Just keep you doing a very good, holding your heading, a real nice descent there.
And then they officially made the switch from Miami to Fort Myers.
Fort Myers Center, King Air 559er Delta Whiskey.
King Air 559er Delta Whiskey, Fort Myers Approach. And are you in a descent right now, sir?
I am. What you want me to do is hold it or what?
Actually, if you can, we can just start a descent down to 5,000, and we're getting some help from another pilot that's familiar with the airplane. We'll get you some information. Can you descend the airplane?
I can, down to 5,000 on heading 270. This is a King Air 200.
King Air 9 Delta Whiskey, Roger. We're passing that information now. 9 Delta Whiskey, are you a licensed pilot?
No time, single engine land, 9 Delta Whiskey.
Okay, very good. And November 9 Delta Whiskey, are you using the autopilot or are you flying the airplane?
May the good Lord hand flying this 9 Delta Whiskey.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
So back in Danbury, before he began to give any advice and guidance, Kerry had to face some underlying facts about what he was about to get himself involved with. Now, is it true that when you found out that he was in the tower and what that could do to you legally, that you ended the call?
That is not true. The true politics of that at the time, I'm unsure of, but I do believe that they were not allowed and air traffic control to be on a cell phone or in TRACON.
What is TRACON?
TRACON is it's a traffic control facility that is basically a building with no windows and a bunch of radar screens. And I turned to him and I said, am I on a recorded line? He said, no, it is cell phone to cell phone. There were some reasons for that. Number one, we could speak more freely amongst us. I did not expect this to end well. And one of the things going through my mind, especially with aviation, is court. You know, I expected to be in court for years.
Well, it was time to roll up the sleeves and see what could be done to help poor Doug White. He was clearly in a perilous situation. You get the call, you realize, oh my God, you know, the odds are obviously stacked against you, which is what makes it such a great story, frankly. But then you had the situation where you had to decide how best to help this guy. What was going through your mind? What were some of the options you were toying with? How could you do this? And what were you thinking?
When you analyze anything, it's usually done in a Christmas tree scenario. It starts off, you know, are things good or are things bad? Things are bad. Okay, go down to the next two. Can we fix it? Yes, no. So my first question to him was, is there a pilot on board? And he said, yes. Low time, single engine, I think was the exact phrase. I said, good, get him in the seat. I did not know at the time Doug was in the right seat and sitting there. As that progressed on, it's like, all right, you know, does he know anything about the King Air? No, nothing. And I think I even heard over the phone, this thing looks like the space shuttle to me. That was literally his words. It's like, okay, I know we're in trouble. I do remember him saying that I need power settings. And my conversation with Dan was, I can't give you power settings. Because power settings are something we use for stabilized approaches, climbs, everything. You know, set the engines to a certain power, set the airplane to a certain pitch. This is the end result.
Why couldn't you give him that?
Because I didn't know his pitch. Power settings are worthless without pitch. If you're pointed straight down towards the ground and I tell you to go to a high power setting, that's not a good thing. So I can't see his pitch. So I turned to Dan and I said, all right, you know, what's his airspeed? He said, his airspeed's varying 100 knots. And I'm like, okay, we're in trouble. That means he's going, it's kind of like going down the highway, swerving left and right and going from 100 to 50. That's the symbology for the average person. He has no clue where he's going, no clue what's going on. And I think that's where he was, they had just turned him over the north, you know, to the north over the Gulf. It's like, we have no control of this airplane at all.
And remember the story about the storm that was depicted in the movie but didn't really happen in real life? So now, the movie, I know that there were some, they took some liberties with some of the facts, like I guess there wasn't really a storm off of the coast of Florida that day, but it was pretty close, wasn't it?
So most of the facts are there. They're not necessarily in the right order. But the symbology of the storm is that what most people don't realize, when Doug White was over the Gulf, they had turned him northbound. In doing so, he had no horizon. And it's difficult to explain to somebody, well, you know, for 57 years, down is the ground and up is the sky. When you put yourself in a situation in an airplane where there is no horizon, you can't tell where down is. You can't tell where up is. And he was in that situation when they turned him northbound. So the symbology, I believe, is the storm, is that now they're in a situation where they couldn't tell where up is down and down is up. So I wanted him back on the autopilot because he had not been on the autopilot, or I didn't know that. And it's like, you know, let's see if we can get him on the autopilot. So I asked him if he knew how to slew the heading bug, which if he had some experience as a pilot, he may know that. Let's see where we go with that.
9 Delta Whiskey, they're telling me you can slew the heading bug. Do you know how to do that?
No.
Okay, no problem.
So the autopilot's out. He has no clue how to manipulate it, move it, nothing. I'm not going to explain a knob from 1,700 miles away. And it's just going to take too much time. Lisa had had him off the autopilot. I knew he wasn't on the autopilot. The autopilot's out of the question. And he's literally all over the sky.
Let me understand how you're hearing all this. So you're talking through a cell phone. On the other end, what are you hearing? You're hearing Dan or you're hearing the transmission?
I'm hearing Dan, but Dan's feeding me all of the data. So, you know, if you listen to the tapes on the internet, you can hear a perfect conversation between Brian Norton and Doug White. But if you listen in the background, you'll hear Dan feeding me all of the information. He's at this altitude, this airspeed, this is what's going on. So, and Dan did a fantastic job of that. So if his airspeed is varying 100 knots, he has some flight experience, he's crying for power settings, what do I do? How do I get this thing under control? And I came up somehow with the words that were kind of key to this whole thing. And that was, fly it like a single engine. I figured if he knew how to fly a single engine, he had single engine experience, he would know that the throttles are there, the airspeed's here, this does this much, this does this much. Take his focus off of everything else in the airplane, and let's see what grassroots does. And I did. I said, grab both throttles, fly it like a single engine. You'll hear that relayed.
$9 Whiskey, the information I'm getting now is to leave the props and the power where it's at and just fly it like you normally would a single engine for now.
And that's when it went from 100 knot variation to 40 knot variation. So now I know he's starting to get it under control.
Was it going to be possible that Doug White would be able to bring this plane in for a safe landing? Well, there were still a lot of hurdles to cross before that plane could land.
He went from 100 to 40 to 30, plus or minus 30 knots. All right, we're getting control of it. How's his heading look? Looks pretty good. He's flying relatively straight line. Okay, he's got some visuals. This is good. Now he starts coming down through 10,000 feet. And 10,000 feet, we have a speed limit in the States, 250 knots. So he's ripping down through 10,000 feet. And I said, how's he doing? He said, he's doing 280 knots. You got to give him a speeding ticket? No, let him go. He was still doing pretty good. I think it was like plus or minus 20 knots there, hold his altitude pretty well. It's like, all right, and I can hear Brian starting to give him vectors.
King Air 9 Delta Whiskey, when you're ready, turn a left heading 180. We'll start working you towards the airport. Whenever you're ready to turn, fly heading 180.
180 to 5,000 for 9 Delta Whiskey. I need to slow my descent down to 2,500 feet per minute here. I need to get my throttle set for this descent. I don't know where to set it at.
Okay, sir, we'll get some information. If you just retard it just a little bit, and I'll get you an answer on that. If you want to stop the descent, that's fine, too.
Now I'm starting to hear the vectors, and the distance is out. Okay, he's 20 miles out. So now I start sinking into literally just sitting in the airplane. What needs to be done 20 miles out? What needs to be done 10 miles out? We got to get the gear and flaps down, but I've got to back that up because I just go click, 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 and it's done. So now I got to back it up a little bit because I have to explain where they are, explain how they work.
And as his process got underway, Doug White at times got a little bit ahead of the planned activities.
Now Doug's starting to calm down. The airplane's starting to come under control. Brian's giving him vectors. Things are looking pretty good. He was getting excited because he wanted to put the gear down. He knew he had to have the gear down. He had only flown pretty much fixed gear airplanes at that point in time, but he needed to get the gear down. And there's a sequence to doing that. Next thing I know is he throws the gear down.
9 Delta Whiskey, the last instruction I got, when you get to 150 knots, the flap control will say approach flaps on there. Just select that detent when you get to 150 knots.
Is that going to be the first notch, 9 Delta Whiskey?
And I'm confirming that right now. That's correct, sir, the very first notch.
2,800, 9 Delta Whiskey, 165 indicated.
Sounds good. You're right on the money. You're lined up for the runway. So altitude, your discretion. You can proceed visually, and just let me know when you have the gear and the flaps down.
All right, gear going down.
Instantaneously, he gets a master caution light. Well, that's because the props weren't forward. I get that. And if I tell him all this, it doesn't matter in the end. Just leave it alone. Just don't say anything. He knows that if I come back to him, it's going to be important. If I don't come back to him, it's not going to be important. Let it go. So he's got the gear down. Then we start giving him instructions for approach flaps. I wanted some flaps in there because I wanted him to land at a reasonable speed but still maintain control. Figured if he was going to go off the side of the runway and skid everything else, at least let's slow it down as much as we can. I got 12,000 feet or thereabouts.
Looking back on it, Carey does acknowledge that not everything was done by the book, but that was only because it was out of necessity and following good common sense.
So there was a lot that was not done procedurally because systems will take over and they'll do what they're supposed to do if they're working. And they did. He's about 5 miles out. Final vector for final.
Yeah, 900 Delta Whiskey. It'll be runway 6. It's a 12,000-foot runway, so you're going to have plenty of runway to work with. And we got equipment standing by, and it's all yours.
What's the wind?
Currently it's 020 at 4 knots. You got any alarms or warnings going off?
Oh, just heavy trim.
Okay, heavy trim. Okay, I'll pass that on. Now they're telling me the trim control is on the yoke, and it's on the left-hand side of the yoke where the thumb would be, on the upper left-hand side of the yoke for trim.
Understand.
That might help you keep from the yoke forces. And 9 Delta with you, just want to verify you do have the autopilot off.
I got the two black buttons on disengaged, which is down on the console.
Okay, sir, thank you.
I think I see a runway at 12 o'clock and about 7, 8 miles, 9 Delta Whiskey.
9 Delta Whiskey, that's correct. You're looking at the right runway. That's runway 6 at International. And 9 Delta Whiskey, you are cleared to land, cleared to land runway 6.
When I touch down, if I ever touch down, do I just kill the throttle or what?
That's correct. When you touch down, slowly kill the throttle. 9 Delta Whiskey, more information for you. It's just easy with the power as you get close to the runway to keep the nose up. keep the power on it, but easy in and out with the power. They're very responsive, so you'll get a lot of response out of it. And $9 whiskey, you don't have to respond. More information, once you make it onto the ground, just center line with the rudder pedals, you kill the throttle and maximum braking.
So finally, after all this activity, Carrie and Ashley learn that the flight is nearing its end, for better or for worse.
So he's starting to get on final. He's actually on final. Runway's in sight. And gear's down, the airplane's configured. And then I start to hear Dan say, okay, he's 500 above. And she goes, 500 above what? The ground? It's like, yeah. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen now. And it's like, so now I get the countdown. 500, 400, 300, 200, 100. And there's a pause. And Dan goes, okay, I think he's down. I'll call you back. Click. And I'm looking at my phone. And I said, what do you mean I think he's down? Did he crash? I mean, you know, what's going on? So there was probably 3-4 minutes worth of dead silence. Just me looking at my phone saying, okay, Dan, call me back. Call me back, buddy. Nothing. And I'm like, come on, look out the window. Tell me what's going on. Nothing. About 3 minutes later, 4 minutes later, I get a phone call back from Dan that says, okay, we did it. There's 4 people walking around the runway. He's down safe. Nice job. I'll talk to you later. Click. And that was the last phone call that phone ever made. Ever. It bricked. So it's a little bit different than the movie. They had their reasons for explaining it. But there was a thought process between Doug and I, non-communicative, that, you know, I was his safety net and I'll come back to him if need be. You know, what was said was, and it was a very clean 4-person relay. So me to Dan, Dan to Brian, Brian to Doug. You know, and some words got omitted, and they got omitted because it worked. You know, you didn't need all the gibberish between Dan and I.
So when did you find out that he told you everything's safe, I'll call you back, then that phone never worked again? What was your next communication?
3 days goes by. I'm like, I'd call him, write the voicemail. It's like, come on, man, you know, answer your phone. So about 3 days later, he finally calls me back. He says, sorry, man, phone bricked. Had to get a whole new phone. And I mean, it wasn't a battery dead. It was a whole new phone brick. Never, that phone never made another telephone call.
And yet one more Easter miracle that day, in a day filled with miracles. The phone that was the vital communications link between Carrie Sorensen and Danbury and Doug White and the King Air 200 did its job that day, but then never worked again. It died, but the White family lived. That wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. The entire episode that day took less than a half hour. A lot of people had to keep their heads about them for Doug White, who ended up doing a great job landing that plane. I want to thank our guest for today's program, Carrie Sorensen, owner of Tally Ho Aviation at Danbury Airport, and his partner and co-worker Ashley Harrison for sharing their stories with us. The answer to this week's trivia question, the question was, this Connecticut resident survived the sinking of the Titanic, but there was a lot of controversy at the time surrounding his survival. Why? Well, the answer is, William Sloper survived all right, but one New York City reporter said it was because he dressed up like a woman to get on a lifeboat and flee to safety. Next week on Amazing Tales CT, we'll have the real and frankly incredible story of what happened to William Sloper back in 1912. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe and please stay healthy.